Blog Talk Radio.
Down in Alabama, in Georgia, South Carolina.
25 years while I write. We can hear voices telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool up. Our only answer in conversation time must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze.
What your life can truly be. Shine and star for you to see. What your life can truly be.
It's Saturday night, and it is Experiencing Spiritual Unity and Meditation with the man himself, Dr. Benjamin Bridges. Let's give him a nice hand and bring him on to the studio. Okay, come on, y'all.
Yes, indeed, my brother. Many thanks right now that the opportunity to have a new show and we can share some positive info with our brothers and sisters and let them know what's up. Yes, indeed. So right now, just focusing on, first of all, saying peace and blessings to each and every one of you, and hoping and knowing that this new year that we are in, this year looks like it's the year that some positive and wonderful change will come about that can really bring about some great things for our people in our community. And I'm just very thankful to see that this is a time that we can come together in unity to really bring about a serious blessing to our community. So all I can say is peace and blessings once again, and we're going to talk about, you know, the importance of us coming together in unity. And that's something that is really not just something that is like, that's not important if we don't come together. So what? No, it is very important. And if we don't come together, then we're just going to keep sitting on the sidelines and complaining about the terrible things we see happening in our community, then positive change won't come about. But if we are going to come together in unity to bring about some positive things in our community, it's going to be a great game changer for the lives of our people. And all I can say at this point, I'm just very glad to see some great and wonderful things coming about. And what we need to do, as I said before, you know, like I said, even with the time span that we just left good old Martin's birthday there, you know, and honoring him for some of the great work that he did, you know, one of the beautiful things that he did do, he found a way to bring our people together in unity. And at that time period, you know, it was, you know, a pretty rough, very rough, you know, time period in racism and things. So, you know, our people couldn't feel comfortable and just say, you know, it's no problem. Yeah, I can accept living like this. Most of them were really frustrated, upset, and angry about it. Plus, you know, you still had, at that time period, in the 50s and in the 40s, you had, unfortunately, a lot of lynchings that were going on as well. And that was by the Ku Klux Klan and other racist groups. So, you know, our people needed to find some kind of antidote to stop all of that madness. And basically, the good thing about that, in them finally coming together in unity, they were able to do that through the marches, the protests, and through the prayers that they were involved with as well. And they put that out there, and the Lord answered that, and Jesus too. And that was a great thing that came through for our people. And then on the other side of the table, right now, bringing it up to the present time, you know, we still have, you know, these problems, you know, and a terrible thing just happened recently. It's, you know, it was kind of like really hard to, you know, imagine that that was is happening. But what it was also a good opportunity to bring our people up to speed on the type of mentality that's in our community right now. And that is with the four black police officers that beat that brother to death, you know. That was ridiculous, man. It was really hard to imagine. And I could see if he had a gun on him or a knife and he just stabbed one of the police officers and the police officers decided to, you know, beat him down because of that. But here, you know, normally when a person is speeding in his car, he just gets a ticket for speeding. And that's it. But for them to go way beyond just giving him a ticket and wanting to beat the life out of him, it didn't make any sense. But that shows you that we do have Uncle Tom brothers and Uncle Tom sisters in our community that really do have some serious self-hatred towards our people. And these are things that we need to really start to change. And one of the important things that can help that happening is us coming together in unity and starting to really have more respect, love, and caring for the people in our community. And once we start to see things from a more important and positive aspect of caring for one another, wanting to help each other, then that's going to be something that will really bring about some positive change in our community. And that will bring us together in unity as well. But if we're going to have a feeling like, you know, I don't care what happens to those guys, I ain't going to help them. If you're going to have that kind of attitude and you don't really care about if things work out for our people, you don't care if our children are getting killed in these gang wars, you don't care if, you know, white or black police officers are killing our people, all these kind of crazy things are happening and we're not going to do nothing about it, then the bottom line is that things are going to get worse. And we don't want that. We want things to get better, and we want to see positive change come about. But the only way it's going to happen is if we deal with that from a physical, practical viewpoint and also a powerful spiritual viewpoint as well. Because both of those combined together can really bring about some positive change. And that's something that we really need to do, because in us coming together physically, whether we're talking about a march or a protest like back in the 60s, whether we're talking about coming together spiritually where we can have people, whether they forget it, it's not important to divide, because that's the whole thing. The old saying is divide and conquer. If you're a Muslim, I don't have nothing to do with you. If you're a Christian, I don't have nothing to do with you. If you're a Hebrew, a Jew, whatever you want to call yourself, I don't have nothing to do with you. We don't need to have that kind of mentality where we're putting up a brick wall on people that are in different religious aspects of us. We can have Muslims come and do their prayer. We can have Christians come and do their prayer. And we can have Hebrews come and do their prayer as well. And as far as our community here in the United States, in the black community, we do have that as the largest amount of religious, you know, population is focused within Christianity, number one, and then you have the Muslims and the Hebrews as well. But the bottom line is, with those three populations and three religions, we could come together and not be stuck in, well, no, he's praying to someone different from my God, I ain't dealing with him. You know, but that is something that we should just forget about, that negative aspect of it. Coming together in unity with our people is very important, spiritually and physically. And if we can do that, that would really be great. Because for us to pray together and visualize positive change coming about, that's where it can really come about. And I know for some people, they say, well, prayer and meditation and all this kind of stuff you're talking about, brother, that can't work. And I understand why you're saying that, because many people have tried to do it in the past and it didn't work for them. And the reason why it didn't work was because they went into it with the wrong mentality. They went into it with the wrong amount of faith. Because if you're going to be a doubting Thomas and you're going to say that you doubt if this is going to work, but I'll give it a shot, I'll try it, but I know it ain't going to work, then you know what? You're right. If you're going to say that you know it ain't going to work, guess what? You're right, because you already put up a brick wall of doubt that says this is not going to really happen. But when you go into praying and meditation and things of that sort, or even if you're on a fast with a group of people, the beautiful thing about it is when you have faith in what you're doing and you really believe that this is something that you can do and that you will be successful with it, then that's when the results come through. Because as I said before, strong believers end up becoming strong achievers. So these are things that we really need to focus on, seeing things from a positive mindset instead of a negative mindset, always saying that this ain't going to work and that ain't going to work, this can't happen and that can't happen, you know, I doubt if this will ever really, you know, ever come about, and all that kind of stuff. Because if we're seeing those negative things, what you're focused on, or what you're, as I say, the power of the spoken word, your words are giving power to you in regard to dealing with things and getting results of negative or getting results of positive. So if we're going to constantly keep saying, woe is me, and this is not going to happen, and that's not going to happen, then basically you're right. It's not going to happen. But when we start to change things around, seeing it from a positive perspective, and know that we can make it happen without a doubt, because God and Jesus can make it come about. And even if you're dealing with it from a different religious aspect, you know, whether it's Allah or whether it's Lord Jehovah, just himself without Jesus, that's not a problem. The bottom line is coming together in unity and in oneness is really what it's all about. And when we can really do that together as a family of community, really seeing ourselves as a family and working together to really try to do what we can to bring about positive change, that's when it's going to really get some good results for us. And even as that old saying, as I said before, you know, it takes a whole village to raise one child. And the reason why they were saying that is that even if that child doesn't come from you, that's a child that lives on another side of town from another black, you know, family, and it's not your family. You got two or three, or you might not even have any children. But the bottom line is, regardless of how many you do have or you don't have, the thing about it is that child that's over there is still somebody that if you see they're in need of help, where you could, you know, help them out in a number of different ways, whether it's talking to them so that they don't get caught up into, you know, different negative things that you might see them doing. If you see them out on the street corner selling drugs and things like that, there's a lot of things that we could say to them to get them to really think about, you know what, this brother is right. Because I never forget when we had our program in the school system, which was called Parents Against Teen Violence. There was a brother that actually, unfortunately, he was one of the gang leaders. And what happened with him, he had a whole bunch of his friends involved in the gang. He even had his girlfriend involved with the gang, and he was about to get married to her. And she was pregnant with his child, too. But the bottom line was that because they were having a gang conflict with one of the other gangs, and that their gang ended up killing about three people in the other gang. So the other gang said, you know what, we're going to get these guys back. We're going to definitely jack them up. And what ended up happening was that other gang, they bought two machine guns, and they were watching the other gang that just killed three people. And they said, you know what, you know, we got to find out where these guys are meeting at, or where we could actually meet the, you know, the whole bunch of them, and then we could go and try to, you know, kill, if not all of them, a good portion of them. So anyway, what ended up happening, they were meeting at McDonald's, you know, once a week. And when they did that, you know, that was in the afternoon around lunchtime on a weekend, on Saturday. And what ended up happening, that other gang with the machine guns, they drove into that parking lot and waited for them to come out of the meeting one day. And when they did come out, that's when they came out with their machine guns and they gunned those folks down. And there was about 25 people in that group that they had in that gang. But the bottom line was, after they shot, you know, almost killed most of the people, there was only a few of them that were still alive. But those that were, you know, down, they may believe that they were dead, because if they would have got up and stood up, those guys would have seen them with the machine guns and shot them down. But anyway, the brother that I was talking about, who was one of the leaders of the gang, and this was in Harlem, he actually got shot in the shoulder. And what really broke his heart was that his girlfriend, which was standing next to him, she got shot in the chest and in the head, and she got killed. And also, because the child that they were about to have, their mother died, so the child died as well. And then the other side of it was, there was only like him and two other members that survived the machine gun shooting. And being that it was, the rest of them were killed. So a lot of his best friends were murdered as well. So anyway, after he went to the hospital, because he did get shot in the shoulder, he, you know, they removed the bullet and everything. But the bottom line was that, you know, he was really very much depressed. He was depressed because he lost his girlfriend that he was in love with very much and was about to marry. Also, he was looking forward to having his child, and which was his son. But unfortunately, he died with the mother. And then, you know, like I said, he had about five or six of his best friends that were in the group, and all of them got killed. So he was feeling very depressed. And that evening when he came back from the hospital, he said he pulled the knife out of the kitchen cabinet, and he got ready to stab himself in the heart. But at the last minute, he changed his mind, and he just stabbed himself in his other shoulder, and then he went to the hospital again. But he spoke at our schools about how depressed and how brokenhearted he was when he said he lost his best friend, he lost his girlfriend that he was really in love with. He couldn't believe that she got murdered and killed. And then he also lost his son that, you know, was about to give birth. You know, but the problem was, being that she died, the baby died as well. So he said all of that really broke his heart into a million pieces. And he said, what are you guys in the schools that are in these gangs, what the heck is wrong with you? Why would you want to be in my situation? Even if you don't have five best friends, but if you got your girlfriend with you, or you only got two or three of your best friends, why would you want to put your life and their life in danger where you can possibly get killed? It doesn't make any sense. Like I said, my heart was broken into a million pieces, and why would you want to get yours broken like that? He said it doesn't make any sense for you guys to want to do something like that. And then from there, what ended up happening, he actually, you know, was on the stage and he was crying about what really went down, because he went back into that memory of how hurtful it was and everything. And after he finished speaking, a lot of the kids that were in the gangs, they came up to him and said, wow, man, you're right. You know, I got to admit, I am putting my life in danger. I'm putting my woman, my girlfriend who's in the gang with me, I'm putting her life in danger. And you know what? I'm dropping out. So he was able to get a lot of people out of it. But the bottom line is that these are things that we can share with one another, how crazy it is to do this stuff, where you're going to either end up in jail for selling drugs in these gangs, or if you're going to end up in an early grave. And why would you want to go down that road where you got so much danger involved with it, where you could possibly, you know, end up getting killed, or your best friend or your girlfriend or someone could get killed as well? So these are things that really awaken a lot of them, because they just see it as, you know, a fun thing to pull that trigger and kill somebody else. But what about you getting killed? What about your friends getting killed? I mean, do your friends or do your girlfriends even matter? They're alive? And if they do, it's time for you to pull out and try to do something positive with your life instead of trying to do something negative. And that's where we come in as well, because if we can offer positive programs to our youth, that would really be good, because they need to see how they can, instead of selling drugs and making nice amounts of money, we can show them how they can make money from a positive perspective. Not that they got to work at, you know, Burger King or McDonald's or work in a factory where they're making crumbs off the table. We're talking about there's programs out here where you can get involved with things and they don't have to worry about the fact that they could end up in a situation where, you know, they could, you know, make some serious money online, for example. That's one of the things where people were getting into job situations and, you know, starting their own little business on the internet and making some serious money. But the problem is you don't know how to structure that or how to get involved with that, then of course you won't even do that. But the bottom line is if you are only taught off the streets by these gang members that are telling you how you can make some serious money selling drugs, and that's the only thing you know about, then of course that's something that you're going to try to see what you could do with that. But our people don't need to send our kids down that road or even our adults down that road. And that's where we come in to try to see what we can do to bring about some positive opportunities on the table. And right now, what I would like to do is to share with you some information about a brother who has been investing in doing business in Africa and how he's been making some serious money and how he has been able to, you know, utilize that as a great opportunity. And the thing about it is you don't have to spend in order to get involved with it, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars. You can get into it at a lesser amount, and you can make good money with it. And Brother Ron, if you could bring the brother on right now, that would be good, and he could speak about this because this is an important aspect of what we need to know about some alternative positive ways to make some cash.
We have to wait till you call back in. I don't know, his number had dropped, so I have to wait for him to call back.
Oh, okay. No problem, man. And did you have any other person that you were talking about with something similar like that?
Not in this case.
Okay.
The people there now are not from this. They're from other callers.
Okay. All right. Well, what we could do is just see from what we've been speaking about thus far, if anyone had any comments on what we just spoke about, how it's important to come together in unity, and also how we even need to give our youth some positive alternatives to what they can do outside of learning what they can do on the street.
602-478, your mic is open.
Hey, greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I do support the NEO Project, support you, Dr. Ron Robinson, Dr. Manyaman. I am here. I am in Mesa, Arizona, and I believe we can change if we take the opportunity and use these resources to change the world. So, hey, like I said, I'm here. I'm working, but I'm here. So, how y'all doing? Good evening, good afternoon, salutations, but I am her.
Okay, that's good. And what type of program is this you're talking about?
I'm sorry?
What type of program that you are talking about? You just mentioned a program that...
My program is the Winning Team Global Connections Tour. We're going to visit 22 markets. We're going to buy up the abandoned buildings that people are doing gang, drugs, and violence, and put positive energy into these markets. No matter what goes on, at every abandoned building, it's a lot of revenue being generated, but we want to make that revenue be populated for the people who need it. So with that being said, I'm here. I'm here. I'm listening, and I'm paying attention.
Okay. Sounds good, my brother. I'm glad to hear that. You are involved with a program like that. That does sound like a positive alternative for our youth and our adults to get involved.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
100. I got the kids with me. I'm going on mute, but I am here. I'm listening. I'm not missing nothing.
Okay. No problem, brother. Thanks for the positive feedback and sharing your information as well. And Brother Ron, did you have someone else as well? Okay. Well, I don't hear Brother Ron right now,
But anyway, what I will say at this point is that it will be a good thing, you know, to hear some positive feedback from other folks that do feel that this is something that we should definitely get involved with to help our folks, to help our youth, so that we can speak about some positive things that we're looking at doing to assist them in bringing about positive change in their lives. And it can be done financially, it can be done mentally, and it can be done spiritually as well. So these are really the three aspects to what needs to be shown as options to our youth. Not just selling drugs, not just joining into a gang, and, you know, then your gang is against my gang, and if you don't want to sell drugs for us, then guess what? We're going to shoot your asses and all that kind of crazy conversations where, you know, gangs are threatening each other and killing each other. So we don't need to have that kind of situation as being the major aspect of what they're learning out on the street. We need to have, as my brother said, you know, he just spoke about this, and that's Pastor Don. He was talking about how he even has a program where, you know, you can take abandoned properties and, you know, give that to people where they can have a positive place to live instead of being out on the street or selling drugs out of that building or something. They can utilize that building to let people have a roof over their head. And that's a good thing, because in having that, it puts you in a positive state. Now, anyway, we do have another person here that basically could speak on these things. And right now, I'm getting ready to allow that person to also share with us, you know, some positive or feedback, if she has some, to let us know what she thinks about, you know, our people learning, especially our youth and our adults, how to actually utilize some positive options with us. As I said before, financially, whether it's physically or whether it's spiritually coming together and dealing with things, and of course, mentally as well. But anyway, here we go. This is Prophetess Ann.
Good evening, y'all. Well, what he was speaking about is the youth. If we come together, if we start spending time with the young people and start meditating and talking to them and see what's going on in their head, because the reason why kids get in gang is because the parents put them down, say they never amount to nothing. See, I can speak on it because I used to be a gangbanger. And when I went and told my people something, they didn't believe me. So when I joined the gang, it was like my brothers, my sister. But, you know, because sometimes kids, they battle with so much, even bullying in school and stuff. So it's time for y'all to sit down and talk to your children and see what's going on in their mind. Don't yell at them. Sit down and talk to them. Pray for your children. You know, if you see the neighborhood children, talk to them. Be a mentor to them. You know, because some of the daddies done walked out the children's life. So that's really the main problem. When the daddy walks out their life, that's why they turn. They feel like they have nobody. But if they pray, if they pray and ask God to come in their life and show them the way, it'll be all right. Because just like Benyamin said, we need to come together. Everybody need to come together. No matter we black or we white, we need to come together like God say come together. We got to have love for one another. All this envy, all this jealousy need to cut out. That ain't of God. God don't have jealousy in his bones. He don't have that. God is full of love. If God gave his only begotten son that we might have life and might have it more abundantly, why we can't go out there and minister to a homeless? Why we can't go out there, talk to our brother and sister? He said, love your neighbor as yourself. He said, your enemy. He said, go back and show him love. The one that's spicy, used, the one that's talk about, still show him love. So I just thank God, you know, what the man of God said about buildings, boys club or kids, something for the kids to do to make it exciting. You got to come down to their level. You can't be so high like you never done nothing. God said people forget where they come from. You know, if it wasn't for Jesus dying on the cross, we still would be out on the street. But it was God's grace and his mercy that kept us. So we need to come together. We need to get it right. If the old people would get it right, the children would turn. They looking at y'all. Your children follow you. They watch you, how you do. You said you holy, be holy. Don't be one way and then you another way and your children looking at you. They looking at you. They said, well, my daddy, my mama, they say they in the church. I got 5 children, 3 boys, 2 girls. And I didn't know my son was watching me when I was out there ministering to people. My son wrote a song saying, if God can save my mama, he can save me too. Start looking in the mirror. He said, examine yourself. Look at yourself and say, God, what am I doing? Why people don't want to follow me? Oh, you ain't got to open your mouth. Let the light shine. People are drawn to that anointing through the love. People on the street, they call me Miss Ann. I ministered to a lot of people, and a lot of people done got saved. They in the church today. Young boys that used to be drug dealers, they in the church today. So I'm telling y'all, love your people. Not only your family, love the stranger. Sometimes when a stranger come up to you, God be testing you. Just to see if you're going to help that brother or you're going to help that sister. That could be an angel unaware. You never know. Stop treating them like they are nobody. I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to tell this little short testimony, and I'm going to give it back to the man of God. One day I went to Kentucky Fried Chicken. The Lord led me to Kentucky Fried Chicken, and it was a homeless girl in Kentucky Fried Chicken. I went to go and pay for my food and sat down. God didn't even let me eat my food until I went over there to that homeless girl. And I said, what's wrong? She said, I'm hungry. I said, well, go order what you want. I'm going to pay for it. When I ordered that food and gave it to that girl told me, she said, Miss Ann, your barrel will never run dry. She said, you going to be so blessed. People going to walk up to you and be a blessing to you. It's not about money. It's about souls, saving souls. I'm about winning souls for Christ. I thank God that, you know, the connection in the spirit. It's a spiritual walk. It's a faith walk. Let's come together. Amen.
Amen and amen. All right, my sister. Thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm glad to see that, you know, you gave some really positive information to share with for our youth and for our adults to take into consideration that our children's lives do matter. We can't just ignore them when we see them out on the street, and you see them going into jail, you know, and it's too late to see them when they're going into a grave. So there's nothing we could do about that after that day. But while they're alive, we do have the time to save their lives, you know. And like I said earlier, even with what we were doing with our program in the school system called Parents Against Teen Violence, we had a meditation program in the schools. And our meditation program, we focused on those youth that were in the schools, many of them who were kids that were failing and stuff. We focused on them taking their minds out of the concept that they felt that they were not mentally capable of getting on that A or B honor roll. They weren't capable of changing their mind so that they could, you know, really accomplish anything successful. And a lot of that came through, unfortunately, the system telling them that they were special ed kids and that they just didn't have that mentality where they were capable of doing that. And unfortunately, many of them believed that. And in them believing such crazy things like that, it caused them to just throw in the towel and say, oh, I'm just going to keep getting F's and getting B's. I ain't never getting on no A or B. So, you know, forget it. So a lot of them didn't do their homework. A lot of them didn't even try to really see themselves as capable of getting good grades in school. But when we had our program, the thing that we showed them, which was very important, was that you are capable and you are not mentally disabled, that you cannot achieve success. And you have the ability to really start to see yourself from that positive perspective. Because once you take your mind out of seeing yourself as a loser, as somebody that can't achieve things, then that's when you start to really bring about positive change, when you do start to see yourself as a winner. And that's the thing. We had to really go over things with them over and over again to actually make sure that they were able to conceive within their mind that they could accomplish great success in their life. But you had to believe it. It couldn't be something that you were just saying, I ain't never going to get on no A or B honor roll. I ain't never going to get no good grades. What is he talking about? They keep telling me that I can't do it, so I know I can't do it. And if you're going to keep that mentality, then guess what? You're right. You won't do it. But the bottom line is, for those who have an open heart or mind and are willing to actually bring about that positive change because they know where they are now, they're not accomplishing anything, and they see themselves as failures. And then the only thing that they see out there is what they're telling them out on the street. That, hey, you know what? Forget it, whether you're getting an A or B or whatever. You come with me and join my gang, and you can sell drugs out on the street, and you can make money. And you can make good money. You know, and when they're told that, they see that as, whoa, I'd rather do that because I can't even get into college because my grades are all jacked up. So this sounds like a good opportunity for me to sell drugs out on the street. But when you start to tell them that, no, you don't have to go down into that dungeon of negativity and possibly end up in jail or end up dead. What you could do is do something positive, but you have to think positive. There's no way that you're going to be going up that ladder of positivity to higher heights and you're going to keep thinking negative. You have to start to change your mind. And that was one of the good things, because we did affirmations with them. With the meditation, we told them that they needed to start to see themselves as winning, start to see themselves as being on that A and B honor roll, start to see themselves as not being mentally incapable but mentally capable. And when we started showing them all these different ways, and even the affirmation, saying, I see it, I believe it, and now I achieve it. I see it, I believe it, and now I, you know, that was something that they were doing too. And that was great. And I never forget, you know, we had a sister that was in, you know, the high school, and that was at Mount Vernon High School. And basically what happened with her, she wanted to be a cheerleader, you know, and join the group. But unfortunately, that particular year, there was a huge amount of students that wanted to be cheerleaders as well. So the head of the cheerleading group, you know, she was saying, and wow, you know, I can't have all these kids because it's just too many. But what we'll do is, you know, keep some of them, and some of them we're going to have to tell them, sorry, but you can't make it because it's just too many of you. So what ended up happening, they ended up, you know, with the cheerleading staff that wanted to be the new cheerleaders to come into the cheerleading group, they ended up telling, you know, some of them that unfortunately they could not be members, that they were going to have to tell them, sorry, but you know, it's just too many people, we can't have more. And, you know, she was in our meditation group, this sister, and she kept on doing a meditation. She kept on seeing herself as somebody in the group in regards to being a cheerleader, and she saw herself successfully being on it. And being that she saw that in visualization of herself being on this cheerleading squad, and also she kept on saying affirmations that, yes, I see it, I believe it, and I know I have achieved it. And she kept on saying affirmations like that. And we had quite a few other affirmations, too, that we said with her, and it really helped her, you know, tremendously, to the point where she kept that positive attitude. And that was one of the things that the, you know, the coordinator and the leader of the cheerleading squad, when she spoke with her and she saw her and other, you know, students that wanted to be on that cheerleading squad, she saw that positive attitude and she saw that positive energy on her. So what ended up happening, she had a meeting with her. And when she had that meeting with her, she said to her, you know what, I, you know, from our last conversation that I had with you, you know, I made a decision in regards to you. She said, really, what's your decision? You know, I mean, she knew that either she was going to end up saying, yes, you can be on here, or no, you can't. But she said to her, no, I'm not going to allow you to be a regular cheerleader. I'm sorry about that part. And she said, really? I thought you were going to say, yes, you were going to let me be a member of the cheerleader. She said, no, not a regular. I'm going to let you be the head of the cheerleading squad. And she said, what? I'm going to be the head of the cheerleading squad? Are you serious? She said, yes, you are. You're going to be the head of it, not just a regular cheerleader. And she said, wow, that sounds great, you know. So anyway, it shows that if you can stay in that positive mindset, if you can say affirmations that can program your mind to see yourself from that positive perspective, and if you can visualize yourself in that positive ability to be successful in achieving that, that's what got her to that mountaintop of success. And she achieved not only just being a regular member in the cheerleading squad, but she became the head cheerleader in the cheerleading squad. And I was really happy for her that she did not take the visualization, the meditation, and the affirmations as a joke. She took it as serious tools that she could use to improve herself and to actually achieve success. And when you find students that are willing to have that open mind and heart and will actually utilize these tools that we're giving them, whether it's the meditation and visualization, whether it's the affirmations, you know, and once you start to have them do that, not once a week or once a month, but every day, and that's how it needs to be done. And if you could do that every day in visualizing yourself from a positive perspective, if you could do that every day saying positive affirmations that will empower your mind and strengthen your mind to see things from a positive perspective instead of a negative perspective, if you can start to do this on a regular basis every day, it's going to have a powerful impact on you. And that's what really changed the lives of a lot of the youth when we were in the programs in the school with our meditation program, really starting to see some great things happening from that perspective. The other thing that was good too, we also had at Ending the Violence Youth Conference, Ending the Violence Youth Conference. And that was once a month that we would go into the schools and we would, you know, have speakers. We had 150 speakers, thank God. That was really great. Because a lot of the speakers, they weren't only in New York, but they came from Philly, New Jersey. We even had some from California. But anyway, the beautiful thing about it was that when they came and spoke to these youth, they spoke in the auditorium to them, they spoke in their classrooms, and they were giving them positive information about how they could really improve their lives and do things from a positive perspective. And I never forget about my cousin, who was an airplane pilot, you know, and I didn't even know this. This kind of blew my mind when he spoke on that in the auditorium. And, you know, we had, you know, about 500 kids in the auditorium there at that time when they, you know, when he was speaking. And the thing about it was when he spoke on this, he was saying how, you know, he's about ready to retire now. But the bottom line is that, you know, he was making $250,000 a year. And I was like, what? You making that much money? I said, hey, that's pretty good, man. You was doing all right, brother, you know. And I thought he was making like maybe about, you know, $80,000 or $100,000. But I didn't know he was making $250,000. That was really nice. But anyway, he was telling the youth, he said, listen, so many of our people are stuck in poverty. So they're making like $25,000 for the year, $30,000 for the year. So if you can make $250,000, he said, that would be a good thing. You don't even have to worry about whether you're going to be able to have enough money to do this or do that or the other. You're going to have more than enough money to do the things that you need to do. You'll be able to get a car. You'll be able to get a house. You'll be able to travel back and forth to a lot of different places by plane with your airplane company, and you don't even have to pay nothing when you do that because you're a member of that airplane company. So they'll let you have that free transportation because you're a member there and you work there. Anyway, what ended up happening, when he was sharing all of this with them, he gave the secret shortcut of how you could become a serious member in these different business airplane companies where you could actually be an airplane flyer, rather. But anyway, what happened with that, because he was a airport person that, you know, flew these planes around, and, you know, that was what, you know, that's the job he had. He was an airplane pilot. And being that he was, you know, the good thing about that, he was making some good money. And he told them what really helped him get his foot in the door was the first thing that he did, he got involved with the airplane. I'm trying to think of the name of this, but this is not the Army, but the airline, Air Force. There you go, the Air Force. And when he joined the Air Force, he got involved with that for about 6 years. And afterwards, he retired out of that, and then he went to a private company, airplane company. And the thing about it, they said, well, you know, how long have you been flying planes? He said, well, I've been flying planes for about 6 years. And, you know, I've really enjoyed, you know, this, and, you know, I've been a good airplane pilot. He said, but how do we know that you are proof on that? And he said, yes. He said, I've been involved with the, you know, Air Force for the last 6 years, and being that I have been involved with that, you know, they've always given me some, you know, good credit for being a good airplane pilot. And he said, hey, you know, because of that, they went and checked on that. You know, the company, airplane company, they went and checked on that to see if he really was a good airplane pilot. And when they checked on that, they found out from the airplane pilot that, yes, they did give him credit for being a good airplane pilot. And because of that, they said, wow. Said, yeah, because sometimes with these guys, there's so many of them, they fly their own private planes, and we just have to take their word for it that they're good airplane pilots. But this guy actually has proof to show it. So guess what? We're going to hire him. And that's what they did. But, you know, black airplane pilots in the United States, they're down to like about 1.5% to 2%. and that's ridiculous. But they know that getting paid $250,000, $300,000, $175,000, or just $200,000 is a lot of money. And they don't want, you know, too many of our folks getting that kind of cash. But the good thing about it is if you have proof to show that you are a good airplane pilot and that you were actually into the Air Force and you got them to back you up and say, hey, no, we've had him for quite a few years and he's been an excellent, airplane pilot. So, I mean, if you want to hire him, I don't see why you would say no, And that's what the company says. You know what? They're right. They're going to say that he's a good airplane pilot. And guess what? That's proof to show that he was. But when you don't have that proof, they just got to take your word for it because you're going to tell them that you've been flying a plane for the last 10 or 12 or 8 years or 6 years and that basically being that you have done that you know that you're a good airplane pilot. But then when you say, well, how can you prove that? And you don't have no proof. That's what gets you in trouble because they don't have, any proof to show that they are good airplane pilots. And when they go to that company and that company wants to, verify that that's what you're saying, they can't find any. So a lot of times, especially with our people, they don't deal with that. Sometimes they take the chance with, different white guys that are airplane pilots. And even though they don't have no proof, they still will give them a chance. But if you're a black person and you don't have any proof, they're not giving you no chance. So what he taught them in the schools was definitely if you really want to get a good paying job as an airplane pilot, you got to have proof. So join the Air Force first and at least do 4 or 5 or 6 years in the Air Force. And then from there, see if you can find a airport company that will hire you as a air pilot. And if you do it from that perspective, 9 out of 10, you will be hired. And they will hire you, and you will be making good money. And he said, after he said that in the auditorium, they gave him a standing ovation, because there's not that many people that are out there that are showing you that you can make $250,000, $100,000, $1 million, or anything like that. They're just showing you that you should be just thankful that you could get a job at Burger King or at McDonald's. And even though you're getting, crumbs off the table money, the bottom line is at least you're getting paid. That's not necessarily a great and wonderful thing just to get paid. And that's the thing. When you compare the amount of money you're making at McDonald's or at Burger King or some of these factories and things of that sort, and then you compare the amount of money that's possible for you to make in selling drugs, a lot of these kids are more motivated to sell the drugs because they can make way more money selling drugs than working in a factory or McDonald's or Burger King. But when you don't have another positive alternative on what they could do to make even more money than that, the bottom line is that it puts them in a situation where they're thinking about, well, hey, it's either working at McDonald's or working, on the street selling drugs. And guess what? I'd rather sell drugs if I'm going to be making thousands of dollars, compared to making hardly, no money with them. So we need to come up with positive opportunities that our kids can see can be a great opportunity to really change their lives. Instead of being prisoners in poverty, we can show them how they could make some good money and don't have to be a prisoner in poverty, but they just need to know how they could go about it and what they can do. And as I said, when my cousin spoke to the kids in the school, he had a whole bunch of them after he spoke come up to him and speak to him about how they could deal with that. And because he had a lot of kids wanting to do that, I spoke with him later. I said, would you mind sharing that with them in the classroom? He said, okay, I'll talk with them in the classroom. He said, I'll be by next month. We'll see what we can do. So homeboy came back the following month, and he spoke with them in the different classrooms. And in those classrooms, he broke it down on what are the proper steps to go through, you know, to go into the Air Force and then to go into an airplane company and deal with it from that perspective. And he said, again, 9 out of 10, if you can show proof that you are a good airplane pilot, then 9 out of 10, that company will hire you and won't have a problem with saying, nah, man, I ain't taking no chances with these guys. No. But if you got that kind of backup where you can really show that you are a good airplane pilot, then 9 out of 10, they're going to say, yes, we got you, man. We're going to you know, definitely hire you today. You know, so that's the kind of thing that makes a difference. And these are the type of programs that we need to offer our kids on a regular basis, because there's a lot of money they can make in that situation. And I'm sorry to see that 1.5 to 2% are the only a large amount of black people that are in the airplane pilot, you know, situation here in the United States. And really, that's not a large amount. That's a very small amount. And the reason why it's such a small amount is, of course, you know how this country is with our people, but also you've got to have backup, and that's the thing. But also, you can also find ways to deal with making money in real estate. You can also find ways to make money in the stock industry, because we used to have something called Black Wall Street. And Black Wall Street actually was very successful, and when they were, they had made a large group of black people in this country millionaires. And because they did that, unfortunately, a lot of racist white people were very angry at them, because they would see them driving by in Cadillacs and Mercedes and chauffeur-driven cars and all this kind of stuff. And here they were, you know, riding on a buggy with, you know, a horse, you know, and in situations where they were, you know, just barely surviving out there in the South. And here you had a black person driving by, and they were living a luxurious life. And it was like, what? This guy got all this money and everything. Here I am struggling financially. Who the hell do you think he is, you know? And the bottom line is, after that happened, they decided to destroy them by going into their communities where Black Wall Street program and organizations and groups were, and they bombed their office buildings, they bombed their houses, and then they machine gunned and killed the majority of their people that were in those communities and stuff. And it was really sad to see, because, you know, here we showed that we could definitely become millionaires ourselves as well. And, you know, racist white folks were just so angry with that, that they wanted to kill all those people that were the millionaires. So these are things that, even though, you know, we do want to see that for our kids and stuff, they don't really want any kind of a program that will show our kids how to become millionaires or how to become even a middle-income person, like my cousin making $250,000, a person making $300,000, $500,000. They don't want you to be able to do anything like that. They'd rather see you stuck at McDonald's or in a factory or at Burger King, barely surviving, where you're, you know, hardly making ends meet financially. And that's how they want to see you dealing with stuff, and our kids as well. And that's why some of our kids are so frustrated that, you know, that's why they join these gangs and want to sell drugs. Because if you can make, you know, 3 or 5 or 10 times the money selling drugs and working in Burger King or McDonald's, you know, why not work there? That's what they think, you know, and that's what they feel. But that's where we come in once again. We have to have positive programs to show them how they do not have to be prisoners of poverty, but how they can be freed from poverty and how they can live a positive and prosperous life. But if we don't show them nothing like that, that's what causes them to take the negative road. And that negative road is selling drugs and getting involved with these gangs and all this other crazy stuff. So we as parents and we as the black people in our community need to look out for our youth. And as the African proverb says, it takes a village to raise a child. And the reason why they said that is because we should see each other in our community as a true family. We shouldn't see ourselves, no, this is my family. Anybody outside of my family, I'm not helping them to get it. You know, and if we got that kind of crazy attitude, then basically what happens with that, it causes our people to get caught up into not wanting to help one another at all. And that's not a good thing. We need to not only look out for our own family, but we need to look out for our community family as well. And that's an important piece. So all I can say at this point is getting involved with showing different programs, not only just to our youth, but even our adults, because when we say 25, 30,000 is the amount that the majority of our people are making in our community, and that's hardly any money that, you know, you can really live financially well with. You know, you're barely surviving with that money. And when you're stuck in poverty and you're making $25,000, $30,000, you know, that's going to be a very frustrating kind of situation. And that's one of the reasons why even a lot of our adults end up ending up in jail and things of that sort, or on drugs and things of that sort, because they're so frustrated and angry about the fact that they're, you know, having a very difficult and hard time trying to make things work for themselves financially. Anyway, once we start to show some positive programs that we can offer to our community, that's a good thing. And the other thing that is very important, the icing on the cake again, is to actually do things from a spiritual perspective. Because when we pray to God and to Jesus and we ask for the blessing of receiving huge amounts of money and cash that can come into our possession, it can come about. But the bottom line is that we have to really, truly believe that it can come about and know that if we actually do start to focus on making something like this happen, it will happen. But if we're going to be doubting Thomases and doubting Thomasinas and just keep seeing ourselves going down, you know, down the wrong road and down into poverty and never being able to get out and all that kind of crazy stuff, then what you see is a very powerful statement. What you see is what you get. So if you're going to see, and that's one of the things it even says in the Bible, you know, without a vision, your people can perish. And when that was said in the Bible, that if you're not having a positive vision of what you want to manifest and bring about in your life and in the lives of your people, then basically what happens is your people can perish in negativity and terrible situations that can come your way. But once you start to envision things from a positive perspective, once you start to envision the fact that you can definitely make some things happen, and you will make them happen, but the only thing is you have to believe it in order to receive that positivity coming your way. And once we start to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God and Jesus are here to truly bless us and help us out, that really makes a difference too. But if we're going to be doubting Thomases even on that as well, that is something that is going to be difficult for those people that are stuck in that. And it's going to be hard for you to come out of poverty if all you see is yourself being only allowed to experience poverty and negativity. But you need to let go of all the negative things of the past, all the poverty of the past, and in the present right now, start to see positive things coming your way, large amounts of money and cash. The blessings of God and Jesus are here to bless you and to resurrect you from a lot of the negative things that you're experiencing right now. And if you really want to see that kind of stuff happen, then you have to start to believe it and see it. And be a strong believer, not a doubting Thomas or a doubting Thomasina. Because if you're going to be a doubting Thomas or a doubting Thomasina, what's going to happen is you're going to find yourself in a situation where you really cannot achieve very much at all. And that is only because, again, what you see is what you get. If you see yourself as a loser, if you see yourself as a prisoner of poverty, if you see yourself stuck into all that negativity, then you're right. You're going to remain in that state of mind and in that state of negative energy that's surrounding you and dealing with you. But once you can start to come out of that negative mindset that Satan wants you to be in, and you start seeing yourself from a positive mindset where you can really start to change your life and bring positive things into your life, then that's when you can reawaken your new identity. And as I said before, positive aspect of that is that you do have the ability to do that. Brother Ron, you getting ready to say something?
Yes. Yeah, Brother Terrence is on for the project in Africa. Great opportunity. We're going to open him up.
Let's get his phone or 205. Share his information as well.
Okay. 205-742.
Hello? Yes, doctor, how you doing? Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Okay, brother, I'm glad to hear that you had some success working out in Africa and that you had some great things that you were doing out there. And we just wanted to see, as a positive alternative for our people to get involved with, what was that you got involved with and how our folks can get involved with it too. And the good thing about it, I heard that it doesn't cost, you know, an arm and a leg in cash to get involved with it. That's another good thing. But anyway, if you could share that with us, that would be great.
Yes, okay. Well, I'd like to say hello to everyone. My name is Terrence Ruffin, and I got involved with a project called the African Startup League. And as you have been stating and talking about the positives and opportunities and everything, we, you know, have to act. When we get on our knees and pray, and after we pray, we have to get on our feet and get up and take action. Prayer only do what it's supposed to do is encourage our minds and change our minds, and men have to get up and change their surroundings. Prayer changes things, but man get up and make those changes. So there's an opportunity now for us to get up and take advantage of some opportunity to change our situation, to change our lives, change our communities. Because like I said, love is an action word. And we have to get up and just saying I love you don't mean very much. You got to get up and show somebody you love. So with this startup African League, it's a cryptocurrency opportunity. And as we all know, that money is changing. We've been used to what they call fiat money, which is the paper money that's got the dead presidents on them. All that's fading out. All that's going to leave us real soon if it ain't, is already in the process, because as we all know, we're using plastic in our pockets, MasterCard, Visa. So the money really have digitized right before our eyes anyway. But it's just a matter of time.
Brother Khalid is on as well. I'm going to bring him in, okay? It's all right. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to bring Brother Khalid in as well.
Yeah, Caleb. We'll bring Caleb in.
Brother Caleb. Your mic is open.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Go ahead, though, Terrence. Finish what you were saying.
Okay, yeah, and we got Brother Caleb with us to further get into details and get into the meat and the potatoes of this situation. I'm just throwing out popcorn right now, and Brother Caleb going to come on in and serve us some steak on this situation. And I'm introducing Caleb to take over and tell us about the African Startup League in detail. Take over, Caleb.
Well, I'm glad to be here, even though it's Super Bowl Eve. Everybody's kind of gearing up for the game tomorrow. But I think after this, a lot of people that get involved in this will actually be going to some of the Super Bowls live. This is a really, really big deal. A really big deal. And we have to thank for this an African-American brother by the name of Marcus Dukes. Marcus actually was born in North Carolina, but made his way to Silicon Valley. And he hooked up with a lot of startups. And, you know, he had made his living in finance. That's what he had been involved in his entire life. And when he went to Silicon Valley, he got in startups and really got connected with several companies that became unicorn companies. And Marcus became a really high eight-figure earner. And he basically took his money and went to Africa. Actually, he went to Dubai. And then he went to Africa and spent several years there just studying that entire country, the continent. He went to several countries over there, able to speak to many of the presidents and saw a lot of what going on and how things were working and not working. And he wanted to really try to create something for Africa that had been created in China about 20, 30 years prior to that, you know, when China was really, you know, more like a kind of a, they used to call China like a third world country and more peasants than there were industrialization. And in just 30 years, China just rose up and become a real superstar on the scene. And so he was trying to figure a way to make that for Africa. And what he did was he had to really, you know, find a tradable commodity that he could really turn into something that could be monetized. And so when he realized, you know, after studying that country and that continent really for several years over there, is one thing that they have there that they don't have in the rest of the world is they have a lot of time. And so he had to figure out a way to turn time into money. I mean, people had, most of the people are not working. And the ones who are working are able to get jobs and making like $2 a day. And so with that kind of income, you know, he could see that this is one of the poorest countries, the poorest continents, rather, in the world. And if he could figure out a way to really kind of monetize that, he would be onto something. And a lot of times when you want to do something, other things have to happen in order for that to happen. So let me give you a little bit of background as to some of those things that really happened that allowed him to a lot of these things to fall in place. Because without some of the things that have come on the scene in the last decade or so, none of what he's able to do right now would have been possible then. And so that's why, you know, timing is everything, okay? One of the things, three things Marcus points out to us, and this is something that he's pointed out on several, you know, occasions when he's kind of given us the overview of what's happening. He says there's three main reasons why Africa is the main place, the main target right now. First of all, he says the demographic power is there. You know, it's the youngest age population in the world. The average age of the person in Africa right now is 20 years of age. I mean, that's really low. That's 10 years younger than most continents out there right now. 10 years. So the average age is 20, and is about 1.4 billion people on that continent right now. But at the growth that they're going at, they're looking at by 2050, it'll be 2.5 billion people in Africa. That's a lot of people at a very young age. And so demographics is a very important part of why Africa right now. It also is one of the poorest continents out there right now. People are making less money than anywhere for the most part in the world. And so it's harder to get to a kind of a middle-class lifestyle. Most people there are living with family members, extended family members. And so it's hard to break out of that extended family situation because it's hard to survive just on your own. The other thing is the social power. Right now, there's already 500 million people on the continent on the internet. I mean, that's almost half a billion people, 500 million people, 250 million of them are on Facebook alone. So think about that. I mean, you know, that's more people, that's almost as many people that we have in the United States they have on Facebook, okay? So the access to the internet is growing, you know, year over year over year. And so, you know, with all the new apps and everyone is using their phones now, the phones have become like a banking system. You have computers you're walking around with literally in your hand. And so you can do more on the phone and quicker than you can on your computer. And so that's why, you know, when you think about the power, the social power and all these different apps that have come out here recently, you know, it's just made life so much easier for people that have been locked out for all those centuries. And then something else dramatic came along that no one even suspected. And I always say that it came from God, you know, because there's no way to explain blockchain and Bitcoin without saying that God had to bring it here and just release it on us. When you think about it, right, blockchain, Bitcoin rollout, and no one actually took any credit for it, you know. You know, we still don't know until this day who rolled it out. We have one name of a person of a Japanese origin. We don't know that for sure. It could have been just a name put out there, but it had never been identified. No one has ever tried to get a patent on blockchain or on Bitcoin. It would just roll out for free. Anyone could access it. Anyone could use it. And it was just kind of like a gift given to the world. Now, when you think about it, when you go back and think about it, nothing like that has ever been rolled out in history where a man didn't try to claim it, didn't try to steal it, didn't try to corner it, didn't try to get patents on it where everyone else would have to go through him or her. Nothing has ever been done like that before except Bitcoin and blockchain. So that's why I say it was something that just was descended, you know, from heaven to earth. And, you know, it was given for our benefit. And so blockchain has solved so many problems. When you think about the problems in Africa, you think about 54 countries on the continent, and every one of them have a different currency, 54 different currencies. Every one of them is part of their centralized money system. That means it's controlled by human beings. Like we have here, we have the so-called feds, and they set the interest rates. They make the interest rates go up, make the interest rates go down. They solve all these so-called inflation problems by causing problems for the average person out there. And so they can freeze your money. They can tell you how much money you can get out, how much of your own money you can travel with, how much of your own money you can do this and that with. But with Bitcoin, with the blockchain, no one can tell you that you can't travel with $1 million. You can't travel with $1 million in centralized money, $10,000, right? They can seize that $10,000 or more, and they can keep it. They can maybe give it back to you, or, you know, but it's just you can't even carry your own money around. Well, there, with blockchain, you can carry $10 million with you anywhere you're going on your phone, and no one even knows you have it. And so not only that, blockchain has a transparent ledger. So everything is recorded on the blockchain. You can't go back and change anything. You can't do a favor for a friend and say, I'll let you have $1 million or $2 million from this bank, and, you know, you can just pay me back privately or do something. You can't do that on the blockchain. You know, it's transparent. Everyone knows every transaction that's taking place, right, is all recorded. And that's another reason that this project is so smooth, because it takes away all of those different 54 currencies in Africa, It can reduce it down to one currency. Imagine all 54 countries basically using one currency, you know, and is transparent, is decentralized, is not controlled by any one government or any several governments, and every individual can access their money anytime they want. You can do transaction from one person to another individual, and it costs you pennies, in some cases less than that, to send money back and forth. I mean, this is a very smooth way to go, and that's what's happened. And so last year alone, $100 billion in crypto payouts went to Africa, you know, $100 billion moved through a decentralization platform that no government had anything to do with, didn't get any piece of the action. You didn't have to pay off all these middlemen to get your money from one place to the next. Right now, you know, we have to pay all of these middle people in between. If you use your credit card or your debit card, there's different fees that you have to pay along the way, you know, in order to use these different services. So Africa right now has hit a critical mass in several countries over there. I should say the continent of Africa has really hit critical mass with crypto and with decentralization. And critical mass simply means this is the tipping point when something becomes self-sustaining, okay? So Africa begins, this whole build-up, this whole process that Marcus is doing right now will be done with a young population, the youngest on earth right now, that's already reached critical mass in major countries on the continent of Africa, like Nigeria, which is about the size of the U.S., has already hit critical mass in understanding crypto and decentralization. We haven't even gotten anywhere near critical mass over here in the U.S. in terms of understanding crypto and using decentralized currency. That's not happening in any of the European countries. Haven't reached that point. But Africa is way ahead already. And so Marcus got this idea. Why don't we make Africa the onboarding continent for the rest of the world? What do I mean by that? So when you open up a bank account in a traditional bank, you have to go into the bank. You know, you have to produce your ID. So they'll know who you are, know your customer and all of that. You have to give them all your information, your birth certificates, your social security numbers, everything, right? So they know exactly who you are. You open up an account, you have a certain amount of money, and you put that money in the bank. Actually, when you put the money in the bank, it now belongs to the bank. The bank can freeze it. The IRS can come in and say, freeze it. You can't get into that account until they release it, that sort of thing. But anyway, you open up your account. And that's how you have an account. Well, in crypto, you need an account as well. And so Marcus is making Africa the crypto capital of the world. So he's already training people over there right now as we speak to actually teach others how to open up wallets, how to get a wallet. What's a wallet? A wallet is a bank account and decentralization. That's just a place where you keep your funds. That's where you keep your money. You're given a private password that no one else has but you, and no one can access that but you. No one even knows that you have that account but you, and you can send money anytime you want from that account somewhere else in the decentralized world. You can receive money anytime anyone decides to send money to you without the government interference with that. They don't even know the transaction is taking place. They can see the transaction taking place, but they don't see your name attached to it. They don't know it's you. They know that the transaction has happened, but they don't know who is behind that password. Only you know that, and only you know who is behind your address, your wallet address that they give you. So he's teaching these applicants. Not only is he teaching them, but he's paying them $2 per day. $2 per day to learn how to onboard people into the crypto world. Why $2 a day? Because the average person over there right now that's got a job, that's really in poverty right now, is earning $2 per day. But they're earning $2 per day going down into mines of different types. You know, they're going under the earth, digging for whether it's diamonds or gold, or, you know, whatever the particular commodity that they're looking for, they're paying them $2 a day for back-breaking work, 12 hours or more per day, and there's no insurance on injuries. If you get hurt or get killed, well, you know, that's on you. You don't get any compensation for that, and that's what they're earning. So he's working them maybe 6 to 8 hours a day, paying them the same wage that they would make if they went into one of those mines over there and worked for 12 hours, right, to learn how to onboard people into crypto, how to set up wallets, how to set up accounts for people into crypto, and teach them how to know your customer. He teaches them all of these various things, how to send money, how to receive money, and all of these things. Why? Because once he teaches that batch of people, then they become teachers that teaches the next group of people that they're teaching. And so, and no one can do that cheaper anywhere in the world, because no one is making less money than anywhere in the world than what they're making right there on the continent of Africa right now. And so Marcus has already kind of monetized their resource, and the resource that they have is cheap labor. He's turned that into a commodity. And so now that's valuable. And now these, when these countries over here, like in America and the rest of the Western world, are ready to reveal to everyone that decentralization, digitalization is the way to go, they don't really want to come out and say that right now, because they're getting themselves in place. They're buying more Bitcoin. They're buying more Ethereum and more of these, you know, serious tokens out there right now than anyone else. They're spending billions and billions of dollars on that because they believe in it, but they want to get in front of it so that they can control as much as they can of it, and still they don't want to give up their power that they have right now. So they're talking against crypto. They're talking against all of these things, but they're actually the biggest holders of these things right now. And so that's the power that these countries have. These countries now are going to have to go to Africa to get everyone in the United States onboarded into crypto as time goes on. Why? Because they would have to pay someone $20-$25 an hour to teach someone how to get a wallet in crypto. They're not going to do that. It's going to be too costly, too expensive. It's just counterproductive. It wouldn't make sense when they can get it done for a lot less money. And so what Marcus is doing even right now, he's charging a lot of these countries $10, $8 and $10 to onboard their people into crypto, where he's paying $2 to teach people how to do it, and then he's making a profit on that right now. So this is a very powerful system that's being put in place right now. Imagine everyone having to go through Africa to get onboarded into crypto, whether they're coming from London, they're coming from Spain, or they're coming from Italy, they're coming from the United States, any of these so-called westernized countries, right, they're going through Africa to really get their account set up. That's pretty powerful. That's pretty profitable. That's pretty wealthy right there, if you just think about it, just that and that alone. But that's not where he stops at. That's just to get the ball rolling. Now he comes up with these ASL tokens. What's ASL tokens? ASL tokens are African Startup League tokens. ASL is just an abbreviation for African Startup League. What is an African Startup League? It's a place for young entrepreneurs in Africa, people like the likes of Steve Jobs, or Bill Gates, people like Jeff Bezos. They have those kind of minds in Africa like they have in anywhere else in the world, right? But they don't have a place to pitch their ideas. They don't have a platform like Silicon Valley where they can go and just kind of, you know, share with these billionaires what they have, and then they handpick the ones that they want to work with, and these are the next icons that come out, okay? So, and that's what's happening with the African Startup League. So how does that work? It's working similar to American Idol. American Idol goes all over the world. They go to all these little small towns, and they're looking for the best talent out there, the best singers that they can find. They want to find new voices, people that you haven't heard that sound before. You haven't heard that voice before. They're not necessarily copying off of someone else. They can be, but they give it their own twist, and they have their own sound. And so they pick the best out of that particular batch, going from city to city. Now, the winner of that is going to get $1 million. You know, probably the runner-up is going to get $500,000, right? But all of them are going to get international attention. And so by the time it boils down to the top 10 candidates, everyone in the world knows them. They know their music. They have a following. They already have millions of people following them on Facebook and other social media platforms. And so they're well-known people by the time they get that far into the contest. Why is that important? Because any of those top 10 contestants, right, any record label out there could choose one of those contestants, and they're certainly going to choose the number one and number two, but they're probably going to choose even deeper into that. Like, for instance, what's her name, Jennifer Hudson. I think she was like number three or four, you know. But Jennifer Hudson is a superstar. Well, she was in that same batch. She wasn't number one. But guess what? Any record label can sign a person like that. Why? Because they already have 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 million followers that's waiting to get their music. They've already been sold on them. They don't have to sell them. They've already been sold. And so that's what Marcus is doing with the ASL teams, right? Every year he's going to release 100 companies that's going to roll out that have already pitched their ideas in front of a lot of the billionaires, and then he's going to roll them out, and he's giving people that own the ASL tokens, people like us, you have to own the ASL tokens to participate in this, right? And what you're going to do is you're going to pledge, let's say, 10,000 or 20,000 or 50,000 of your tokens, because the tokens are 1 penny each right now. I'm sorry, 2 cents each right now, which is going to go up drastically here in a minute. And then they're going to take them completely off the market. But right now, you buy your tokens. Let's say you have 100,000 tokens, and you pledge 25,000 tokens to four different startup companies that you have looked at the information that they have put out on these companies. You've had a chance to view them pretty much like you would view a contestant on American Idol. And you say, I'm going to 25,000 tokens onto this person, onto this particular candidate, onto this business, right? And at the end, the winner, just like an American Idol, is going to get $1 million. The $1 million is going to be money that they're going to give to them toward their business to help get their business to a unicorn status. You know, that's the whole idea, is to get money, get funding to these young companies over there, to these young entrepreneurs over there who have great ideas. And keep in mind, they need in Africa everything that we need, and we're taking for granted over here. They need everything that we have over here right now over there. And so someone is going to have to look and see what's missing in their communities and bring that particular idea out, get a business plan, and actually they become one of the contestants in the ASL 100 companies released every year. And people like us who own the ASL tokens are going to pledge money against this. Now, here's what's so fabulous about that. When you put up 25,000 of your tokens that you paid 2 cents for, let's say you were fortunate enough to jump on this right away and got 25,000 tokens or 100,000 tokens at 2 pennies, you can do the math on that. It's not a whole lot of money, but it's going to be worth a fortune later on. Now, once this company becomes a unicorn company, even before it becomes a unicorn company, now, first of all, what's a unicorn company? A unicorn company has been described as a company that reaches $1 billion in evaluation, $1 billion, okay? So this company, you invited to the table and got equity into this company when it was 2 cents. And now the company is worth $1 billion. Give you an idea of what that kind of money could be worth. Uber came on the scene, and Uber was like any other startup, right? It didn't even have an evaluation, right? And so one guy put up $10,000 behind Uber, $10,000. And when Uber finally hit the scenes out there, when all the apps was in place and all the dust settled, and it started running toward that unicorn status, right, of $1 billion, the guy that put up $10,000 now is worth over $100 million. $100 million. Normally, we don't get invited to the table to really put money in that early on. We get invited to the table once the company has already become big and has already become very successful, and now you can buy stock in that company. But guess what? The stock now, maybe it's $200 a share. You know, $150 a share. How many shares can you get at $150 or $200? But you can get a lot more at 2 cents. And that's exactly what we're looking at here, being able to really get equity in a company early on. And Africa is going to have 100 of these released every single year. And here's the win-win situation for you. Even if you pick four or five companies and put all of your tokens toward those four or five companies, and none of them show up toward the end of the contest, right? Other companies were chosen, right? All of your tokens now are returned to you. Let me say that one more time. Your tokens are returned to you, and next year when they roll out a fresh 100 companies that's going to be competing for the $1 million prize, you can pledge all over again with those tokens and see if you can hit one then. You'll have your tokens will never go away. You'll constantly be able to use them and use them and use them over and over and over until you hit one or two or three of them. And when you hit one or two or three of them, it doesn't make any difference at that point, because now you got equity at a level of 2 cents or 5 cents or 6 cents, whatever they happen to be at that particular time. But now it's a unicorn company that you have actually, you know, pitched up to. And now you're worth, you know, 20 million, 50 million, 100 million, that sort of thing. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at really being able to convert pennies, hundreds of millions of dollars perhaps. And even if you don't reach some of those heights and you just wind up earning yourself 5 or 10 million or 15 million, I mean, when I got involved in Bitcoin, when I found out about it, I mean, it was much lower than that before, but when I found out about it, it was around a little over $1,000 a Bitcoin, which, you know, it's not terrible, $1,000 a Bitcoin. I just didn't have $100,000, right, to put $100,000 toward it, nor would I put $100,000 toward it even if I had it, because I didn't know enough about it to really risk $100,000 behind it, right? But there were people who knew about Bitcoin when it was one penny, when it was two pennies, just like ASL is right now, okay? And some of those people got a huge chunk of it at that particular time. Well, Bitcoin right now, time I checked, was around $25,000 per coin. So if you got it for 10 cents or 15 cents or 20 cents or even a dollar, you're looking extremely well right now. You're wealthy, right? ASL is going to go exactly there. Why? Because ASL has more behind it than any token on the market right now, including Bitcoin. Bitcoin, Ethereum, all those are really highly prized tokens, no doubt about it, and rightly so, okay, being the first, being the second. But this one here is providing jobs for millions of people throughout the continent of Africa. Think about that. This one here is turning people into from making $2 a day to $1,000 a month to $2,000 a month. They're turning into middle class. They're growing on up where they're starting to making $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000, $5,000 a month for the whole continent. This one here is going to be the crypto capital of the world
Well, we are on board. When I say we, the African continent is onboarding people from all over the world. Is that token likely to be going out of style anytime soon? And guess what? When this token is totally sold out, there's only going to be a billion of them out there, but they're going to start burning the tokens long before a billion now, because some things have happened in Africa recently that's really going to make this spectacular. Right now, the centralized banks in Africa is only allowing people, especially in Nigeria, only allowing people to pull out $44 per day, per week, I'm sorry, $44 per week of their own money right now. $44. This is their money they're trying to access. But with centralized banking, they really control the money once you put it into their banks. It's their money now. They can release that money whenever they choose to release it, and they can hold that money as long as they choose to hold it, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's why decentralization has to come about. As the world turns, as the world progresses and grows, it's just a natural order of things, right? Things get better and better and better, and now it's getting better for the person that really has been taken advantage of the most. And so now everyone is going to Africa to be onboarded, to get their wallet set up, to learn how to really begin to use crypto. That's what's behind the ASL token. That's got more behind it than Bitcoin has behind it. What does Bitcoin have behind it? Nothing. Except people believe that it's going to keep going up and going up. It's the granddaddy of all tokens. Yeah, that's good. But it really doesn't have any people behind it. It really doesn't. But it's going to probably remain big because it was the first one. Ethereum, it's got a lot more going than Bitcoin, actually. But, you know, it doesn't have the number of people behind it that something like ASL has behind it. And some of those other tokens out there that you look at, if you go to CoinMarketCap and look at them, they have nothing behind them whatsoever. They didn't get their first. They haven't mined the tokens or anything. People just come out and come up with ideas, and they, out of thin air, say that we have, you know, a billion tokens. They just come up with a figure, and they start selling the tokens for under 1 cent. And a lot of people buy those tokens because they say, look, they're less than a penny right now. If they grow to 1 penny, if they grow to 5 cents, I've already made X number of dollars. Well, but they have no real value because there's nothing behind it. There's no people behind it. They're not solving any problems in the world. There's no real purpose for them except speculation and that sort of thing, right? That's why they go away quick, because they never was anything anyway, okay? This one has a continent of people behind it, and pretty soon it's going to have the whole world behind it when the world is going to Africa and say, hey, onboard me into crypto. Isn't that what's happening right now? When you get these calls from people calling from the Philippines or calling from India, you call to check on your credit card and see what's going on, but you get this Indian voice, and you say, well, wait a minute, I thought I called to check on my B of A card. Where are you? You know? I'm in the Philippines. You're in the Philippines because it's cheaper for Bank of America to send all of that business over there for the Philippines to explain all of that to them for $3 and $4 and $5 an hour than it is for them to pay someone $25 an hour over here to do it. So you're going to continue to hear those foreign voices onboarding people into different things, okay? For the credit cards and debit cards and those kind of digital type of devices, they're using the Philippines, they're using India, a lot of those places. For crypto, they're going to be using Africa. That's how far ahead we are than the rest of the world right now. The information you're getting right now, most of the world doesn't even know it exists. Doesn't even know it's going on right now. Doesn't even know what's happening right now.
Well, brother,
but you're getting in on this right now, and you have an opportunity to really get it at a very, very low price.
Brother, let me ask you this, because what's happening right now, we only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to find out your name, and is there a contact number for you? Because I definitely would like to, you know, set things up for you to be able to share this with our people even more so. But what's your name again?
Well, my name is Caleb Manasseh. I'm here in Marina Del Rey, California. But the person that really invited you to the call is Terrence Ruffin. And Terrence is someone that me and my wife introduced to ASL, okay? And you can get in contact with Terrence. Terrence can get in contact with me anytime. He has our private numbers. And but I prefer you get with him because he really has been a part of this group, and he has invited me to come on and just share some things about what's going on with the ASL token, and that's why I'm here.
Well, is there a number where we can get in touch with Terrence?
Yes. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. So what's the number?
Okay. Now you can get up with me on WhatsApp. WhatsApp a number is air code 205-742-8818. 742-8818 on WhatsApp.
818.
And I could be reached on Telegram, and that's Telegram name is T-Ruff4U on Telegram.
Mm-hmm.
And you also can reach out to me on Facebook, Terrence Ruffin. I'm on Facebook. Terrence Ruffin, just find me on Facebook.
And you can give me your email too, Terrence.
Yeah, and my email is truff4u@yahoo.com.
I'm sorry, say that one again.
So that's T-R-U-F-F.
The number four.
And another U, right?
Right. truff4u@yahoo.com. That's T-R-U-F-F, the number four, the letter U, at yahoo.com. truff4u.
It's T-R-U-F-F, four, the number four, U. .com.
No.
Yeah, yahoo.com.
At yahoo.com. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And what's your town? What's your last name?
Ruffin. Y'all remember the famous Temptation, David Ruffin?
Tempo. Oh, Ruffin.
All of us from the same little town. David Ruffin with the Temptation.
Mm-hmm.
We are cubs. Come from the same home.
Yeah, one of the heirs of David Ruffin. They had that smoothest voice out there, the Temptations.
Okay. All right, great. Well, brothers, I tell you, I really do appreciate what you shared with us this evening. And that was some very valuable and good information because, like you said, you know, for Africa to be lifted up financially now is in the process of still doing that. But you can see the improvements coming about. That's a good thing. And that can happen here in this country with our people as well, you know. But the bottom line is, if they don't know, then they're not going to be able to grow in this. But once they do know, that's when they can really start to take advantage of this great opportunity. So that's
now,
good.
What's your name?
Oh, my
name
is Dr. Benjamin Bridges. And basically,
I didn't get that. I'm sorry. I didn't get your full name.
Oh, that's Dr. Benjamin Bridges.
Spell it.
That's Benyamin.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's Benjamin. And then Bridges. It's like London Bridge with an S on it.
B-R-I-D-G-E-S?
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
But, Doctor, it's been my pleasure, and hopefully you, whoever else is interested in this, would jump right on it, because with what's going on in Nigeria right now, they're thinking about leaving this offering open for the next maybe 30 days, and they may burn the rest of the tokens. They may not even go, and, you know, there'll be a lot of people grabbing a whole bunch of them at the 2-cent mark. And he's going to let some of the bigger investors to come in and get large chunks of them. But what he had wanted to do was to allow as many average people like us, like me, to come in with our small dollars and get whatever we could. He lowered the amount down to getting a minimum of 100 tokens. You know, so 100 tokens, you can imagine, I mean, at one penny, or two pennies right now, right? What is that, $20 or something? So that's a pretty low bar. And so he was doing that so that people like us who never get these calls to come to the table when something is about to kick off like that, we always get the call after it's already kicked off. So we don't get a chance to participate in the wealth part of it. So he wanted to kind of change that around because, like I say, he was born here in the United States, North Carolina. He's gone through all of what all of us go through that was born here, but he made his way up to high status through Silicon Valley, and now he wants to give back to as many people as he possibly can. And he's giving back a whole bunch to the African people over there. And so if you're interested in this, you need to get with Terrence and get some of these tokens immediately because they won't be 2 cents very much longer.
Right. Oh, let me give you my phone number as well, and then we're going to get ready to close off because you got the music you hear playing, but it's going to get louder in a minute. My number is 914-979-6372.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So, you know, whenever you guys would be willing to get in touch, you could contact me at that number.
Are you located? Are you on the East Coast?
Yeah, East Coast.
Okay,
East
New York. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, sounds great. Sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to meet each other in the flesh at some point.
There you go. Sounds good to me. So it sounds like we're on our way for a successful and brighter day, brother. Thanks to you. All right. Now the music's going to
play. he knew it.